Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker. Brian Hayes, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Jonas O. Siegel from The Athletic. You're very Irish today, Jonas. We established that last hour that you're a big, big fan of St. Patrick's Day.
Yep.
So who knew? I wasn't aware that you were so dedicated. But perfect guy to have on the show today, and I assume you're going to head down to the rink and catch Leafs-Canes tonight. The Leafs will be in Ottawa tomorrow. The game tonight's on TSN, on TSN Radio. Mike Johnson will join us here in a moment. And they're going with the 11 forward, 7D.
I wanted to ask you about that.
12-6. Do you have an explanation on why it's 11-7 tonight, 12-6 tomorrow? What is changing?
Why would you lay it out? Why would you say that? Like, I don't understand why the coach is like, doing it 11-7 tonight, 12-6 tomorrow, just so you guys know. Like, you have no idea what's coming tomorrow. Like, if there's injuries tonight or something, like, you're going to have to adjust. It drives me nuts where, like, I know us in the media, and believe me, we're all guilty of it. We want answers from coaches, but the coach has no idea what he's doing for tomorrow's game. He's just trying to get through tonight's game.
That's there's usually a plan, what they say, right?
But there's a plan in place. I get that. You plan out the week and go, hey, I'd like to see Samsonov Friday night, Murray Saturday night. That's the goalies are a little bit easier because it's two of them and you're just laying out starts. But 11-7 tonight, guys, we'll see what it looks like tomorrow after we get an injury report after the game.
Because maybe ice time, like for the forwards, like they're playing some of these guys too much and some of them not enough.
Yeah, well, I get that. Like everyone's making like Marner played 2 days straight the other night. He played 29 minutes. Like
that's
McDavid
too many.
Does that. Yeah, it is on one given night. He didn't do it for a week straight.
Yeah, but he kind of did. He played like 25 a few games before that. He's playing a lot.
Sounds like he wants to, though, right?
Yeah, he's a superstar player.
I gotta
say,
like, it's March. Like, you're gonna run him in the ground a little bit now? No, I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem wise to me to play him 25 minutes a night in March.
I don't think it will continue. I think Keith will be cognizant of that. Maybe not tonight because there are 11 forwards. And if you're down a forward, who are you going to go to when you need a shift? Aston Reese or Marner? I mean, it's pretty clear who he's picking. And he referenced it, I believe, today, if not yesterday. Every time he looks down the bench, Marner's looking at him saying, put me back on the ice, which I think is a good sign because Marner understands he's feeling it right now and he's in great shape. He's in his mid-20s, right? Like, And I said this yesterday, Jonas, like, I feel like it's deja vu whenever we get into these conversations, and we've been having them for 7 years, and I'm not sure any of them actually matter come playoff time. You know, the debate over what you do on back-to-backs, the debate over minutes played, the debate over who's going to play with who. Like, they've gone through it all, and I feel like they've changed the way that they've operated year over year, whether it's the Keefe years or the Babcock years, and it's still led to the same result. So,
what does that mean?
Well, the point being is, because Mitch Marner played 29 minutes 2 nights ago, doesn't mean they're going to get swept by Tampa.
No,
also doesn't mean they're
going to
sweep Tampa. Like, it has no bearing on what's going to happen in a month.
No, but you can't say it's a good idea to play him a ton of minutes in the month before the playoffs. Like, how does that? Like, you want him to be fresh. Like, you don't think there's anything to that? I think there is.
I think there is, but I see what you're saying, Jonas. Like, 29 was too much, but that's an outlier. If it happens to be, and this is where you manage games too. This is where if you're up 4-1 going into the third, you don't need to double down on the power play. Like, this is the in-game management of going, and there was a stretch. I'll go back because the guys who chew the most ice time that, you know, that I watch in Canadian hockey is usually McDavid and Draisaitl. And if they're up in a game, I've seen the second power play go out. I see Jay Woodcroft manage that. And believe me, he's gone 11-7 a lot in Edmonton because he tries to find those guys extra shifts. It helps their team. Now you're in the Leafs situation where, yes, your only battle is whether it's home ice or not. You know who you're playing. But I do think there is something where you can pull off some of his ice time. You know where I'd like to see it? On the penalty kill. Like, I know
they've done that a little more of late.
Mitch is good on the penalty kill, no doubt, but last thing I want to see is him get hit with a one-timer slap shot at the top of the umbrella there when maybe it could be Nolan Achari, because Achari got hit in the hand the other day. Mm-hmm. He was shaking his hand. All I thought about, well, that's the, you know, if this guy's got a broken hand or something like that, again, you can't bubble wrap players, but you can place them in situations where they don't have to face one-timer slot, you know, slap shots. And that might be, if you want to take some of Mitch's ice time away and get him from, let's say, 25 to 22, you could take 2 minutes away from of special teams, especially the penalty kill, and then maybe somewhere 5-on-5
to possible.
Get down a bit.
Again, 29, of course, is excessive. It did go into overtime, but it's one game. It's not going to happen again, but it does. He's proven he can deal with it. Like he, I think he's prepping for the playoffs, building up towards it. Here's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. How many minutes is 2 minutes? Too many minutes for Marner and I guess for Matthews, because Matthews played a ton of minutes the other night too.
Well, let's just say it's a 60-minute game. That one went to overtime. I think anything nearing 25 is too many for our centerman. It's just too many to do consistently. On a one-off, you can maybe get there, but I think 23 is pushing the outer limits of getting the very best every single time the guy is on the ice. Now I know that I heard you guys, you know, the 11-7 obviously caters to the good players, and Marner as a winger doesn't have to work quite as much as Matthews down the middle. They're both obviously in good shape and can handle it. But like tonight is what? They're 3rd and 4. And they play again tomorrow night as well, or whatever, it's gonna be 4 and 6, whatever it is. You know, like you do need some rest, even though they are incredible at it. I don't think you want to push them over 23. Unless you absolutely have to, and maybe they feel like they have to, or maybe they feel like they want to, but it's not something you want to do long term.
No, and I wouldn't expect that it will happen. I think Keefe gets caught up in the game. It's on Keefe. You know, it doesn't matter that Marner's looking back at him all the time. The coach makes a call on who goes on the ice.
Hey,
but
I used to look at back at Gretzky, put me on the power play. He never did. Like, you know what I mean? Just when you're looking back, it doesn't mean you get the ice time you're searching for. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's on Sheldon. And, you know, I think in a game against Colorado, their big boys were playing a ton. There was a lot of special teams, so lots of 5-on-5 and lots of 5-on-4 both ways, which Mitch, of course, plays. But you're right. It's on the coach more than it's on the player to say, yeah, I'm good to do it, because guys are always good to do everything, even when they're not.
Right. And I think, again, we keep talking about these learning experiences, these amplified moments that you can apply to the playoffs. In recent memory, the Leafs have not had a lot of games that have gone into overtime in the playoffs, and not any that I can recall that go into double OT, triple OT. It's been a long time. But I there's a part of me that thinks, not that that was the conscious decision, but in a way, you realize Marner's still got it in the tank if it gets to that point. Like, if it goes to double OT, triple OT, this guy is going to be buzzing still once he hits the 30-minute mark, 35, 40 minutes. Like, he's going to – I don't get the impression like he's losing gas later in these games. Like, I didn't see that the other night. Matthews is different because he's a bigger guy. And to your point, Johnny, playing center, he's got more battles down low. He's got more ice to chew up. But Marner, I don't know, man. I think he can play 24, 25 minutes in his sleep. I really do. It doesn't affect him.
He can. Not in a game, maybe, but would it affect him the third game or the fourth game? If it happens over and over and over. So, no question. Like, he didn't look tired at all. He was spry as ever at the end of last game. But if you asked him to do that night after night after night, would it eventually sort of take a toll on him? And the other thing about Mitch that's amazing, and just having been around the team a little more closely this year, is that I don't know how tall Mitch Marner is. He's 6'1", maybe. He's not big. You know what I mean? Like, he's a thin guy. Which probably makes it easier to carry that weight around for all those minutes. But the fact that he isn't as involved as he is, being the size and sort of weight that he is, it's amazing that he's able to kind of be durable and not get knocked around, because when you see him, he looks like he weighs 180 pounds. He doesn't look like a big guy.
Johnny, I just want you to admit that the easiest position to play in hockey is a wing. That's the laziest position you can play. Just admit
it. Hang on. You're choosing the wrong word. I was all on board. I'm like, sadly, I will admit, it's the easiest. And then you went and said laziest.
Okay,
you're right. Is the laziest a backup goalie noodles?
You're right. You're
wow,
right. Because you need a.
That's
it
a
is, but
for
here
you.
It is a good counter. But here's what I'm saying. It's like outside. Like, I could think of players that were great players, but they maybe lacked in certain situations. What did they play? It's always the wing,
always.
Right?
Yeah.
Brett Hull comes to example. Like, you can hide players on the wing, because it's like, that guy's not really good. He's not going to be the first guy back. I'm talking defensively, like offensively, yeah. They're brilliant. I'm just saying defensively, if there was flaws, they always played wing, because it's like, that guy can be the last back in the zone, just chasing the play, standing there with his D-man. Even O admits, like, all he had to care about was that defenseman that stood there, and he would just stand beside him. So I getting into all of this talk, yes, a winger can play a lot of minutes. It's different in today's game, obviously, with so much speed, yeah, and all of that. So I was joking tongue-in-cheek, but I
no,
wanted...
You're not, though.
I'm slightly joking.
It's 100% true. Why do centermen get moved to the wing at the end of their career? It's because you don't need to skate quite as well. Now, I will say this. When O and I played, the way that we have to play defense, or the way that they have to play defense now on the wing, is entirely different. Way more sagging, way more moving, way more blocking shots, a lot more involved than when O and I used to. Like, you could have just pitched your tent up there by the blue line and say, I got my guy. Like, I'm not worried about anything else. It was very, very easy. So, and there are moments when you're a winger where you can conserve energy in the middle of a shift. Like, you're like, okay, I got this 7 second battles in the far corner. I'm in defensive zone. I'm standing in the slot. I'm just standing there. I'm not doing anything. So, it all plays into, Marner playing as much as he has. But, I saw the note today that it was the third highest time on ice in a game this year behind, I think, MacKinnon and McDavid were 1-2. So, Centerman had the top two numbers. Of course, those guys all being some of the best in the world.
Well, Mike, obviously part of this is 11-7, and I don't know about you guys, I'm kind of tired of 11-7, just like talking about it and it being a thing. And yet, like, it is a thing, and it is something that they're doing, and it feels kind of destabilizing to me for some of their D, and including Morgan Riley. How do you feel about it, Mike, just in terms of maybe taking someone like Riley, who's used to playing 23 minutes and now some nights is playing 18? Like, do you think it has an effect on guys' rhythm within a game that way?
Oh, for sure. 100%. Like, Jones, you understand, like, with six defense, the top guys don't get out as much as they want. You know what I mean? Like, they never get as much. They want to go every other shift. They want to kill penalties. They want to do everything. And then you add another guy. And in Riley's case, maybe that's shaving 5-on-5 minutes. And there's a real concern and conversation that is warranted and appropriate about, you know, where Morgan Riley's game is and how to get him back to his best self. And, you know, maybe it's turning a corner. He scored a goal. He's been looking like he's got more jump. But I don't know if playing him 16 minutes is the way to do it. It's a real challenge. And not just for the top guys, though. Because think about if you're, let's say, Luke Shen tonight. I don't know if Luke Shen's on the second pair of the seventh defense. I don't know exactly what we're going to call him. But let's say it's him. Like, if you're not playing very often, and then you got to go out there and your specialty is, like, high leverage penalty kills. But you haven't played very much. You're not really in the flow of the game to the same degree as if there were six defensemen on the... Like, it affects those guys as well and how effective they can be. While they may be rested, they won't be probably as engaged in the game because they just haven't played as much. So it's all part of the dynamic. Sheldon acknowledged as soon as it happened, he's like, I don't like 11-7. I prefer 12-6. And now, because they have all these defensemen and not enough forwards, now maybe they have to play 11-7. It's kind of far from ideal for the defensemen. For the forwards, it doesn't really matter. The best players get more ice, which we talked about. They don't mind it at all. But for the defensemen, it's tough. It's tough on all of them.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence either that it started after Ryan O'Reilly got hurt, right? Like, when O'Reilly's here, he's in the lineup, he's playing. I think they like this Achari, Kampf, Aston Reese line. Mm-hmm. I think that line,
it, right?
Yeah, I think that kind of sticks. So I think it's going to be 12-6 come playoff time. I'd be borderline shocked if that wasn't the case.
And then knew that O'Reilly's going to be back before the playoffs start. Kind of confidently back with, you know, a week or two left. So they're going to have a little run there. And you're right. You can, and Sheldon has sort of latched onto that fourth line that you're talking about and really appreciates them. They've had some really good games. Of course, that game against the Oilers where Achari was incredible. And then they're just sort of biding their time with the other eight guys, I guess, up front, waiting for O'Reilly to get back. Although I still am, even as I watch the games now, and I'm still curious, like, I still think O'Reilly comes back and he plays in the middle. I think he plays third line center. I don't know if he plays with Yarncroke and Kerfoot. I don't know who he plays with, but I think he probably ends up playing third line center.
Yeah, that makes sense. It gives you depth. It gives you different matchups, and you can move him around. I mean, there might be some games where you can slide him up on the left wing in the two hole type of thing, but then also put him in the third line and give you some favorable matchups, especially on the road where you're not you don't have last change. So, Johnny, we were talking about it last hour. about Samsonov going tonight and Murray tomorrow. Playoffs start today. Who's your guy? And do you think it's a short leash, or do you think that Matt Murray still has a chance to be a guy in the playoffs, or viewed as a number one heading into the playoffs?
The only thing short about that is the conversation to me. Like, there is no conversation. It is Samsonov. Game one starts tomorrow. It's just him. And I think there's about the same amount of leash as there ever would be on anybody else. I don't think it's particularly short or shorter because Matt Murray's around. And I just don't think Murray's played enough. He just hasn't been healthy enough to get into the rhythm required to sort of show that he's on the same level right now with Samsonov. And Samsonov's record at home is lights out. So, no, I think it's him all the way. And I think for Matt Murray, the remainder of the season is about showing, if you need me, you can trust me. If you need me, I will be there, both like in quality of game and also in health. And if he does that, then that's about all he can do. It has to go pretty bad, I imagine, for Samsonov to not be available during the playoffs in lieu of Murray. So, not much to it, if you ask me. I think it's kind of decided. Interesting enough, guys, you know, Matt Murray's obviously was pulled with the ankle thing right before playing Ottawa. Freddie Anderson was just told out of this game tonight, was supposed to play against the Leafs, and we got Kochetkov playing instead of him, the young guy. So I don't even know. We're trying to figure out, is it health? Is it performance? Is it? Well, I don't know what to make of it, but I just got to the rink and that was the news that's come down.
What a shot. It's the Spider-Man meme, man. Spider-Man looking at Spider-Man. Freddie and Matt Murray in the hallway down at Scotiabank.
You got to get somebody on that Photoshop right away.
That's what it is. And because, like Johnny, I said earlier, these two, like, I don't know what to expect tomorrow. I think Murray plays, but I don't think it's a lock. He makes it the puck drop against Ottawa. I don't think it's a lock.
It's got to be. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I think at some point, like, you have to want this game. Like the other way, like, even though I'm not quite right, even though maybe I'm not feeling great, I'm going to play anyways because I want to play against my former team. When I ever got traded to have a chance to go back against my former team, I was all over it. Like, I couldn't get in that game fast enough. So I don't think something's going to happen on his way from the hotel to the rink. I'm going to say he's going to play tomorrow, but
okay.
But I mean, I've been wrong with him before this year, obviously.
Yeah, I hope so. Listen, I'm pulling for him to play. I think he's got to get it over with. You got to play your former team, and then you move on. You have to. But you know, the last two times he was set to play, it was day of. Obviously, it went south. Out west, it's, you know, Winnipeg and Calgary now jockeying for position. Only one of them is likely to get in, and Nashville could spoil it for both of them. But if they get there, if one of them gets there, Winnipeg or Calgary, which of those two teams do you think has a better chance at doing damage in the playoffs?
I don't know. I my answer is probably neither. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I would say, well, they'd be in the wild card. So I guess whichever one ends up, if they end up in the Central, like, is Dallas so great that you can't conceive Calgary finding a way to beat them? Probably not. Like, so if you get into the Central, it seems like maybe that might be doable for one of those teams, but they just haven't had the kind of consistency as of late to think that they'd be able to maybe take on those guys. So I would say neither. And how about, you mentioned those two teams battling, like, Nashville, by points percentage, had they won last night, might have been almost ahead of Calgary.
Right.
A brutal loss to Chicago, 2-1 at home. I think, like, Chicago, the games in hand, that was one of them, and they wasted losing to Chicago, as many teams have, but that would sting this late in the year. But, yeah, I don't have a ton of faith in either. I don't know, Hayes, how about you, but they both seem like they're good, but neither one really strikes me as great right now.
No, I'm with you. I would lean Calgary because of the nature of how I think they can play a lower scoring game. Yes. Like, yeah. You know, like, yeah. I have more faith in Hellebuck than Markstrom, but not when they're both playing at their height. You know, I would say Hellebuck's probably a bit better, but not much. Markstrom's more than capable of being a great goalie.
I don't know how you guys feel, but I've always felt like the way watching Calgary, and I was in Calgary last weekend, they're built for the playoffs, but they might not make it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, heavier, kind of low scoring, grind you down. They do have some players that, you know, this Peltier looks like he's going to be a player, but, you know, Toffoli's been one of their only consistent guys, same with Backlund. Everybody else has been grossly underachieving in the Kadrys and Huberdeau, and you know the goalie has gotten going recently, as you mentioned, Johnny. Like Markstrom is a guy who I think can play, and Hellebuck can play, but I think Calgary's built for the playoffs, but it's just I don't know if they'll make it.
Yeah, they do feel like when Calgary plays well, their games will have tighter margins, right? Because it's a little more defensive, a little tighter checking, and if you're not as good of a team, if you can play a tighter margin game, you have a better chance of winning. Where if it, you know, the better team gets lots of chances back and forth with Winnipeg, you know, I think the better team probably ends up winning, which probably won't be Winnipeg. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, I don't think either one is jumping out saying they're if they get there, they're going to be really dangerous right now.
With Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. So Sidney Crosby secured his 83rd point. Maybe
ridiculous.
The quietest 83 points in the league for a guy who's been the face of the league for 15 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get why. And listen, I'm guilty of it. I got a mic every day. I could talk about him every day if I wanted to.
Right.
But that secures 18 seasons now where he is at least a point a game. Only Gretzky has done that with him. I mean, how do you put that into perspective?
It's obscene. It's crazy to think that he's done it every single year he's played. 18. Rested it 19 times. He just passed Gordie Howe, who, you know, seemed to do it forever. And you know, through different eras where he was healthy, where he was high scoring, where he was injured, where he's been a more of a two-way guy, where he's on the best team, where he's on a team that's a bubble team, does not matter. He just churns them out. And it's the crazy part about him is, like, he's not really had a McDavid-like 130-point season, right? Like, he is just, you know, steady Eddie. He gets kind of between 90 and 105 or that pace and just does it year after year after year. His game has evolved. But, I mean, you still watch him, and he's still excellent. He's so tough to cover. Strength down low is the same strength that kind of he had skating-wise that he came in the league with. It's an underrated, amazing accomplishment that we probably should. Like, I don't know how we don't pay enough attention to him. We probably should, because he deserves it. And it's incredible. And again, I don't want to diminish Pascal Dupuis or Chris Kunitz or Brian Rust or Jake Guentzel, for sure, is a star player. But he hasn't had, you know, a Marian Hossa the entire time. He hasn't had a running mate, Malkin, on the power play, but rarely 5-on-5. He hasn't had a Hall of Fame caliber running mate his whole career. He's kind of taken whatever was there, and they've been great with that, which makes it even more impressive.
It's incredible. And, like, I think McDavid has overshadowed it ever since he got here. Like, all of our attention went to this new kid, this new shiny toy. And the last 3 or 4 years in particular. But, like, Sid is still doing it, man. He's probably going to end up with 100 points again this year. And I have no reason to believe he won't have 82-plus next year and the year after that. Like, I think he'll hit 20 years.
Yeah, which is, I mean, one more to tie Gretz, right? And then two to pass. You know, and they're 40 games, so even if he doesn't stay healthy, if he gets 70 and 65 games, he's still right there. I don't know why you'd bet against it at some point. Father Time wins, but the way he's rolling along, it doesn't look like it's imminent.
No, that is for sure. Leafs Carolina tonight on TSN 4. He will have the call. He is Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right, boys. Happy St. Paddy's Day. Behave yourself tonight.
Yes, you too. Yeah. There he is, Mike Johnson, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. Yeah, Sid is... you know, we talk about him. We've been talking about him for years on this show. That he's just he's a grit grinding superstar, and that's what it is. When he's cooking, man, he's just dogged. He's constantly in the opposition's other end. He's constantly on top of the puck, on top of the play. He skates with such power, and yet, like Johnny said, his best year I think was the second year in the league. He had 120 points. Which is a great season, and he's hit the century mark multiple times. But if he gets there, it's 100, 104, 103.
Right.
It's not 130, 135, pushing up on 150. Like, McDavid's a different beast statistically, but I don't know, man. Sid, the way he can play and the way you can win with him, it's second to none in the last 15 years.
Well, so how do you think we'll rate their careers? Because McDavid's going to have more individual awards for sure. Like, how many hearts do you think Crosby has?
I think he's got three.
He's got two.
He has two, okay.
And he has two Art Rosses. Like, McDavid, I think, already has more than that.
Right.
I know he has more Art Rosses. I don't know. I think he has two hearts.
Yeah, and he's going to hit three.
He's going to win three, right? But so does McDavid need two cups, one cup, three cups, like none? Yeah. Like his numbers are just going to be so outrageous that I don't know how we'll look at this.
I think it is. It's going to bring into focus that conversation about you need to win, right? It'll be a Dan Marino type conversation. Like
yeah,
you got to get one. Because not only does Sid win, he obviously has, he's also won back-to-back Conn Smythe in 16 and 17. So he's won three cups, he's been to four cup finals, he's won two Conn Smythes. He's obviously won two gold medals where he was the man, right? In 2010 and 14, he was the king of those teams, the captain of the teams. Although he wasn't in 10, I think. Was it Niedermeyer in 10, I believe? But he was the captain in 14. He scores the golden goal. Like, that's where McDavid's been ripped off by international hockey not being available to him. He hasn't been able to match, you know, what Sid was capable of doing. But those are moments that, like, I don't think it should hurt you necessarily if you haven't won and you haven't had access to those big moments because it's a team sport. But I think it should help you if you did, right? So I think if you're Sid, you can't take away a golden goal. You can't take away two Conn Smythes. It's not his fault that Edmonton hasn't done it, right? When he showed up in Pitt, they were just as bad as Edmonton was when McDavid got out there. You know, and it turned around quickly for him. And, he's got Malkin. Who's McDavid got?
Yeah.
Draisaitl.
They just built a better team around him, basically.
Wow. Well, it took them a while. That's the thing. You know, you win, but then it took them a while to get back to winning. Remember,
absolutely.
Pitt, there was – and Sid had the injury issues, too, where that was something that well, we were all concerned about his career there for a bit.
Yeah. Big time.
You know, you know,
that was a huge part of his career. And to his credit, he's completely overcome that. And it's a thing of the past, right?
Right.
It really is. And that is a testament to the greatness of Sidney Crosby, for sure. Quentin Richardson coming up. His take on where the Raptors are at. They won big last night. What's up with the NBA, though? And the Raptors are a perfect example of this. Very good at home. Good to very good at home. Awful on the road. What does he make of the parody of the NBA? And he played at least one game in the Madness back in his day. We'll get his take on that experience as well as March Madness continues. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Mail It In Friday brought to you by Boston Pizza, Canada's favorite sports bar. The push to the playoffs is here, and BP's elite lineup of pizza, wings, and ice cold beer is always dialed in for game time. Hustle into your local BP tonight and try our new four cheese ravioli bites, a game-changing appy.
Yes.
It's here for a limited time only. It does not get any better than that, a four-cheese ravioli bite. And like, this will be a big day at Boston Pizza. There will be a lot of people rolling through. St. Patrick's Day, it's a Friday night. You got March Madness going. You got the Leafs playing tonight. What else could you ask for?
What is the, you know, St. Patrick's Day food? What were you saying? Is it fish and
chips?
We're
getting fish and chips.
I don't think of fish and chips as Irish, though.
That's more like London, England.
Yeah, it's British and Scottish. Like, I think the Scots generally kind of own fish and chips personally. But, yeah, I don't know, Jonas. Like, what? You're Irish, allegedly. Like, apparently you're
adjacent?
Our Irish correspondent.
I don't know.
What is the go-to cuisine?
I don't know.
Potatoes, for sure. I mean, you can mix in potatoes to anything.
Yeah.
That's synonymous with Ireland, for sure.
I mean, when I lived in London, there was fish and chips everywhere, and everything had sauté, which was basically fries. It was deep-fried everything. Like, it was, you had sauté with eggs, you had sauté. It was just
the cuisine
heavy,
is not, it's not
heavy
strong.
Food.
It's not strong over there. It's not. Like,
really?
An English breakfast and, like.
You don't like an English breakfast?
No,
I
not
put on.
Fan.
Wow.
Not
I lived
fan.
In England. I put 26 pounds on in 2 months.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's just because you're boozing probably all the time, right?
Yeah, I was boozing, and I was eating nonsense there because the food is legitimately heavy. Like, I'm not lying. Everything was fried food. So.
It's heavy. I don't deny that. It is heavy. All right, we've got a longtime NBAer, and he's now a co-host of the Knuckleheads podcast. Here is Quentin Richardson back on Overdrive. How you doing, Quentin?
I'm good, fella. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. So, I mean, you had your dance with madness back in your DePaul days. Is this a big tournament for you? Are you tracking it, or are you kind of more focused on the NBA still?
No, I'm actually tracking this. My best friend, Dennis Gates, is the head coach of Missouri, so I'm definitely a Mizzou Tigers fan right now, pulling for them to go all the way.
Okay. All right. So what do you remember from your college days and, like, the buzz and the buildup leading up to the tournament and waiting for Selection Sunday to see where everything plays out?
That's what this was all about, man. When you were in college, the big dance is what it's all about. We didn't get to go dancing too far in my time, but it definitely was still a very exciting time and something that was, you know, awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, it's such a cool event, and it obviously continues up here on TSN and down in the U.S. And, you know, as for the NBA, where the Raptors are at, what I've noticed in the NBA, and I'm curious to get your take on this, and the Raptors are not a great team. They're a mediocre team at best based on their standing and based on the way they've played. But they are strong at home. Like, they show up at home, and on the road, they cannot get it done. And it feels like that's consistent throughout the NBA, and it's likely always been the case. But it feels even more significant this year that it's just so difficult to win on the road. Do you have a reason for that? Is it parity? Is it just the nature of the business that being on the road makes it more difficult? Because it really seems to be sticking out this year.
I mean, it'd be several things, man. I mean, you know, every home team is tough. You know, they got to protect the home court, and that's the most important thing like that. So that's what everybody is trying to do. And we got, you know, you got your home crowd. Everything is more normal than, you know, to your routine and to everything you do because you're at home. You're on the road. Different type of things can come into play, and, you know, you never know. But, I mean, at home, you know, you pretty much get to set your own standards because you're doing it from home.
Yeah, and in terms of finding that, like, great team in the NBA, do you sense that there is one or that there is one that's on the verge of sticking out from everyone else? Like, is there that number one clear-cut best team in the NBA today?
No, I think that's the good thing about it, man, that, you know, unlike, you know, last 5 or so years before now, you know, you were able to kind of see, like, okay, Golden State, okay, you know, this team or that team. But, like, now it's kind of like you don't know. You know, so many injuries and different things and scenarios where guys are out and going to be back to playing and different things. So I think that's the exciting part of the playoffs, man, that you don't really know exactly or who's going to do what, and not expecting this team or that team to really just run away with it.
Well, Quentin, do you still believe in Golden State? Like, obviously, you talk about a team that can't win on the road. Like, are you worried by their season so far?
Obviously, you know, that road record concerns you and things like that, but I'm also wise enough to know, you know, playing in the league that, you know, one good game in the playoffs or one good series can turn everything. You know, you get one game on the road and they play well and everybody starts feeling good and it's this whole big turnaround thing and it's like it never happened. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen with them. But, I mean, they got Steph, the greatest shooter ever. They got Clay and Jordan Poole, and they got great teams. So I'm not really, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they go on a huge run and do something.
Sticking with the West, who do you think the scarier team in the playoffs would be for up there, the Suns, Lakers, or Clippers?
Scary? I think all of them are, but I think the scariest, man, if I'm being honest, I got to look at, if Devin Booker, Chris Paul, and KD start to figure things out. I mean, we've seen what LeBron and AD and them are capable of doing at full strength. I think the Clippers are going to be really, really formidable if they can keep everybody out there healthy and stuff. But, you know, when KD's healthy, he's the best player on the planet. And if he gets, you know, a healthy Devin Booker and a healthy Chris Paul, I think, you know, they got a great opportunity. And being DeAndre Ayton is a wild card as well.
Chatting with Quentin Richardson, and I've always been curious to get your take on the LeBron versus, you know, Jordan debate that's omnipresent. It's always coming up in the NBA.
There is no debate.
There is no debate. Okay, what's the answer for you?
It's Michael Jeffrey Jordan. There is no debate. I don't even talk with people who want to argue with me about that because they don't have clear sense.
Okay, so you're a Chicago guy, though. Like, is there any bias involved? Like, take us through your – because you grew up in Chicago. I'm assuming you grew up like, he's probably your idol, like a lot of guys there in Chicago, a lot of kids, period, growing up. So why is it so clear-cut for you? Why is no one, you know, being sensible or sensible when they say maybe LeBron is better than MJ?
Because a lot of the times the argument I get is that he went 8 or 10 times, however many times he went. I don't care how many times he went because he lost more times than he went. He shouldn't have lost. Like, MJ got there 6 times and never lost. And he never went to a Game 7. He never left it in doubt. He never had to do any Game 7 heroics because he handled that business before we got there.
Yeah, that's It's a pretty good case to make.
If he didn't retire, he probably would have ran off 7-8 the same way. Like, but he would have won them. That's the only difference. When he gets there, he wins. And he don't leave the MVP or the question up to nobody else. He handled that business himself. And you know that he was the reason. Obviously, he had teammates. Can't win it by himself. But he was the overpowering force every single time, 1 through 6. And you can go look at the all-star teammates. As soon as he got an all-star teammate, he didn't lose. He won championships. When Scottie became an all-star, they won championships. He didn't have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different dudes come and this, that, and third. MJ had the same little crew.
Well, in terms of the modern-day MVP and the debate kind of hanging around that, I know you're writing about it today. It's Embiid, Jokic, Giannis is coming on strong, and he's making some noise. But my understanding is you think it should go to Joel Embiid. Why do you believe Embiid is worthy of the MVP this year?
I just feel like, he's had his argument for the last couple of years. And I think, this year it's come to a head where, kind of toward the end of the year, things are playing out in his favor. He had the head-up duel where he absolutely dominated. But, I mean, also, Denver are kind of faltering right now, not winning at the same pace. And I think that leaves that opening for him. And I think, this would be, kind of overdue, like when Harden had supposedly had gotten it so many years, and then he finally got one.
Is there anything Giannis can do to sway you to him?
It looks like they're gonna
win the East.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it'll be interesting, man. I think going down the stretch, I mean, Giannis has missed a few games more than he usually does and things like that. But I think any of those three, man, I can't argue. Whoever they vote for and whoever they decide, I think all three of those guys are way more than deserving. And it'll be great for them to have it.
Well, there's chatter up here about OG Anunoby and how well he's playing, and specifically defensively. And he's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but the idea of being on the all-defense team on a losing team, though, there isn't a lot of history of guys on teams that, finish with 40 wins, 38 wins. But this is a guy who is positionless. Like, OG defends everyone. It doesn't matter. If you're 6 feet guard with the ball in your hands, he might defend you. If you're 7 feet, he might get in the paint and defend you. This guy's been a beast. His metrics are off the charts. How much love should a guy like Anunoby be getting for his defensive prowess, considering he's playing on a team that is below 500?
I mean, I think that's the only thing, like you said, I think that's the only strike against him. He checks every other box, guards multiple positions, and, at a high, high rate. And he's a positionless guy. He's been unbelievable this year, all around, offensively and defensively. But I think, that could go against them heavy in a big way with them being on a not-so-successful team and things like that. But if he does make it, I think he absolutely deserves it because, to me, every award shouldn't be so heavily weighed on the wins and losses because sometimes you can't control that with one player. Especially somebody like him that's a great defensive player, he shouldn't be penalized because he's not on a great winning team if he's a great defender.
Check out the podcast, the Knuckleheads Podcast. He is former NBA Quentin Richardson. Always great catching up with you. We appreciate you doing this. Thank you.
All right, anytime, fellas. Thanks.
There he is, Quentin Richardson, who he is from Chicago. That is as blunt as we've brought up MJ, LeBron. And I wasn't really intending on doing that, but we were talking LeBron. I knew he was from Chicago, and it was like there's
don't
no question.
Go there.
I have friends who are Jordan fans, and that's the argument. You can't have an argument to them. 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, 6-0. That's
a pretty compelling case. It is one thing that LeBron simply cannot match.
He also went to, I think, 10 and 8 or 9 in a row.
Every year he was in the final. Every single year. Those 4 years in Miami and then 4 years in Cleveland and I believe his first year in L.A., right? The bubble. I think it was 9 years in a row he was in the final.
But it's hard to argue with the perfect record. That's what it is. And then MJ,
yes,
packed it in. Like, if he would have continued to play and...
They would.
I mean, there was some weird stuff going on, too. Like, I don't know if it's ever been... Like, he stepped away from basketball, got into baseball, came back. Like, was it ever documented?
Yeah, there was a lot of conspiracy theories as to what was going on there.
Exactly. Like, it was unofficial suspension and stuff. Yeah. And, all of that type of stuff. Like... That's a 30 for 30. I'd watch that one to be like, I need to know the truth behind why he stepped away from basketball.
Didn't you watch, what was it, The Last Dance?
I did, but it, It wasn't.
It skirted it, I guess.
It wasn't in there. I'm talking. They asked him.
I think, didn't they?
I don't remember. I watched The Last Dance. I thought it was awesome, but I don't remember that part. I remember his father was murdered, which was awful, and you know, a lot of things like that. But I don't remember, like, there was a time there where there was some whispers. Again, where are the whispers coming from? Is it the, you know, Joe from the Bridges, or is it like, you know, sources that really
it was like in the newspaper noodles. Like,
I think we would know definitively by now, though.
Right.
If David Stern had pulled him aside and said, this is what's happening.
Right.
But, like, he left. They won three in a row. He takes effectively a year and a half off. Houston wins the 94-95, and then he's back into the real swing of things, and they win three in a row again. And as Richardson points out, like, he didn't even allow it, quote unquote, to get to a game seven at any point. And he was the MVP in all six, and it was indisputable. Where LeBron, like, it's not, it feels weird as if you're taking a shot at LeBron in this conversation. I think it's a compliment to both guys that is the debate. If anything, the players that might be offended are the Kareems and the Magics and the Wilts and the Bill Russells. Like, those guys don't come up enough in this battle. But it is the ultimate mic drop. You know, whether you agree or disagree, the fact that he won 6-0, won all six MVPs, never allowed it to get through Game 7, no one else can challenge that. No one else can.
They never face, like, Golden State type
team. Yeah, but that always comes up. But, it's like, those Utah teams were really good teams.
They weren't that, though.
Okay, fine.
It's like Karl Malone and John.
Yeah, Golden State was a great team, no question.
But to bring it back to what we were talking about before, it could be, like, McDavid, Crosby, Jordan, LeBron. In terms of, like, LeBron's going to have all the records.
Yes, he already basically holds them in terms of points and assists. He's going to have games, like, all that kind of stuff. He's going to own everything. And he does have his rings.
Yeah,
and he's got his MVPs. Like, he's got all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's old school versus new school, too.
Yeah.
And Jordan was known as a, you know, pretty mean teammate, a pretty, you know, kind of a jackass type of thing. But, I mean, LeBron is third person talking about how great he, like, you know, there's people that think LeBron's very unlikable, too. You know?
Well, so I think that's a part of what makes the case for Jordan, though, more so than LeBron, is LeBron seems like a more of, not a laid-back guy, but, you know, working with different players, he passes the ball up. A lot of times he makes the right play, like the IQ play. Where Jordan was a killer, and I think in sports we appreciate that more. We appreciate a guy who demands it, who goes out and says, watch this, I'm going to do it, where LeBron has not been in his nature. And I think that's another reason why points end up in the side of Michael Jordan. A lot of it is aura-related, right? It's the aura of Jordan, the greatness of Jordan, what he represented. And LeBron is close, but he's not on the same level, and he's never going to be. All right, we're going to possibly bring up a new bit at 6:30. I'm hesitant to go here, but it's possible.
I kind of liked it.
It's a St. Paddy's Day related bit. We'll get into it into the next hour. And Mario Cecchini, the newly named QMJHL commissioner, will join us in about 20 minutes on the ban on fighting starting next year in the Q. What went into it? Why does it make sense? How will the players react? A lot of things to get into with Mario. We'll do that in about 20 minutes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Mail It In Friday is brought to you by Boston Pizza, Canada's favorite sports bar. The push to the playoffs is here, and BP's elite lineup of pizza, wings, and ice-cold beer is always dialed in for game time. Hustle into your local BP tonight and try our new four-cheese ravioli bites, a game-changing appy that's here for a limited time only. Spring training continues, and every fifth day you're waiting for Yusei Kikuchi to get out there, right? Kind of waiting to see what kind of numbers he's going to put up, and Yusei was on the mound today. And it didn't go as well as it had been going previously. Now, to be fair to him, listen, he had a clean sheet. You know, he had put forth, I want to say, three starts, seven innings, no earned runs, which is not possible to continue. But a couple of walks today, got hit a little bit, and it's just a lot of nerves, right? A lot of anxiety around Yusei. And meanwhile, Jose Berríos, who's at the World Baseball Classic, it seems like he's kind of skating. And As much as I think Kikuchi gets people riled up because of how poorly he pitched, and he did last year, and the amount of money that he was making, Barrios is making substantially more. Barrios got a bigger commitment than any other pitcher in franchise history and was a mess. Like, at what point between now and opening day does that conversation really start to pick up, you know, even more so than just kind of joking about what Kikuchi's doing on the mound? For me, it's a much higher priority. Like, Barrios is, like, that really could be the turning point, I think, between, like, 90 wins and possibly touching up on 100 and, like, winning the division and fighting for a wild card spot, because I feel very good, very confident with Manoah and with Gausman and with Bassett. You add in Barrios, if he returns to form, you've got a 1-4 there that not many teams can match in the American League.
So is Barrios in the four hole?
Yes, I think so as of now, which is crazy. Because, again, he's just kicking in on a 7-year deal at $130 million, $125 million.
And Kikuchi's in the five hole.
Yes,
then?
He will be your fifth. He's starting. He's gonna break camp as your number five guy. But those are two redemption stories where one really counts. Like, if Kikuchi falters, it's not ideal. You know, you might have to go out and find someone. You might have to start, you know, using openers. You might really have to adjust your plan. But Barrios, if he struggles again, you are talking disaster at that point. Yeah. Disaster. Because of the financial commitment that they've made to him.
Well, you know what? I just... Bad seasons last year, there was no trust. Like, I mean, can you have a little bit of trust because of spring training in
Kikuchi? I don't think so. No, not at all. They got to show it when it really means something. But
right.
It's like the preseason. Remember Denny Malgin?
Gino Malgin.
Malgin.
Yeah, just in town out there buzzing around. Gino Malgin.
Jeez.
Yes.
Yeah. No.
But Gino Malgin was making $850,000 on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like Gino Malgin.
It's a little like what it'll be like next year for Huberdeau in Florida.
Yes.
When his extension kicks in.
That's a great example. Mm-hmm. Huberdeau is the Jose Barrios of the NHL. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Because if it's a mess again, you're like, now it's a trend. Right, now it's not a one-off problem anymore.
Well, no, make 10.5. No, is it 10
yep.
and a half? 10?
Yep, the 8-year 10.5 are kicking in next year. He's got to be at least an 85-point guy.
Yeah,
right. He's got to score goals for you, put up points. He's gonna make that kind of money.
Yeah,
it has to be. Final hour coming up for the week. Mario Cecchini will join us, the commissioner of the QMJHL, and possibly Leprechaun or Leprechaunot. Okay, we'll explain it. It's not overly complicated.
Yeah.
We'll see how we're feeling at 6:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.